Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, www.ciut.fm over the internet. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with co-host Rob Moore and general news guy and webmaster in the studio today. Also, we are graced with the presence of Levi Waldron, who is our guest today as well. And I'm glad he's here after a long hiatus. And he'll hopefully have some interesting things to share with us today, too, about vegan athletics. He's a recent convert to veganism and a very fit person. And then Lamia.
Oh.
Lamia is here. She's teching with us, and she has a new bike.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys hear my bike got stolen?
We announced it on the air before.
Yeah, yeah, right? I know. And now I have a new bike because my beautiful friend bought me a new bike.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to start off with talking about bikes because we're going to be talking about veganism and athletics, and I'm going to let Rob do a formal introduction to the show.
I'm kind of excited to welcome back Brendan Brazier to the show. He was here a year ago. He is one of the top professional Ironman athletes in Canada and a great vegan inspiration to us all. And he's here to talk about a new book called Thrive, A Guide to Optimal Health and Performance Through Plant-Based Whole Foods. And he's also going to be in Toronto tomorrow to launch a new product, a 100% all-vegan meal replacement called Vega, which is extremely exciting. And so he'll be on about halfway through the show to tell us all about that. And Brendan credits his plant-based nutritional stress reduction diet as a significant reason for his ability to compete in one of the world's most demanding sports. So stick around for that.
When I was typing up the press release, I realized that I did not know what nutritional stress meant. And so we're going to find out what nutritional stress is because, yeah, his whole diet plan is about reducing nutritional stress, which is something I didn't even know was possible to have. Also, for part of the interview, we're going to kick it off after Rob shares some news with us. We're going to hear from Tony Iyer from Armory, which is it's a newly formed website. And it's the Animal Rights Media Online Repository, which is a great tool for anyone who's looking for high-quality images of animals inside animal exploitation industries, as well as there's some great pictures of liberations as well. So it's just sort of a media, I guess, database, image database for activists and advocates who need good images. So we're going to be talking with Tony, and he's from the UK, so it's going to be fun to hear from him today as well. And then at the end of the show, I believe we're going to hear from Julia Keis.
Julie Keis.
Keis.
Yeah.
And she's a superstar activist. This is how Rob introduced me to her. She's involved with Farm Sanctuary as well as ZooCheck and probably a bunch of other organizations as well. So she's going to tell us about the Walk for Farm Animals, which is put on every year by Farm Sanctuary and just a really good opportunity to raise awareness and funds for farm animals. So that's the program today. But before we jump into all those exciting interviews, we're going to hear some news from Rob Moore.
Thanks, Lauren. This week's news is all over the map. With free vegan food swaying the masses, Ontario protects circuses' freedom of expression, and veterinarians finally start to think about animals. First up, would you like some plum sauce with your microchip? A few weeks ago, I reported that broken needles from antibiotic injections were being found in meat. Well, now CNN.com says that more than 1,000 pounds of pork processed at a Sioux Center meatpacking plant was recalled Saturday because a microchip could be embedded in the meat. The animals processed September 10th, or rather killed for no reason on September 10th, were part of a research herd that had been sent to slaughter, without the proper notification that they had the chips implanted. The meat had been sent to processors in Colorado, Iowa, and Mexico, but none of the meat appeared to have reached consumers. Next is a great story that I think will provide inspiration to other animal advocacy groups. From the Minnesota Daily, Matthew Allen visited campus Friday looking for a job. Instead, he might have found a change in lifestyle. Allen and many other students tried vegan food Friday at a vegan food giveaway on the West Bank. "Oh my God," Allen said in response to the taste of a Burger King veggie burger. "That's all I can say." Provided with the food by the university student group Compassionate Action for Animals, students tasted vegan burgers, chocolate ice cream, and various meat substitutes. Allen said he was astonished by the taste and was considering becoming a vegan as a result of the giveaway. "I can't believe there's no meat," Allen said. The group's advisor, Gregory Oshwald, said he was hoping to hear responses like Alan's. People need to realize vegan food tastes great, Oshwald said. In the past, the group has shown a video called Meet Your Meat, a film detailing the lives and deaths of animals used for food. Oshwald said both tactics for promoting a vegan lifestyle are important because people need to have reasons for going vegan, but he said it is generally best to do the events at separate times. The goal of this event, Oshwald said, was to get students to taste vegan food. We give information on factory farming, provide students with great tasting food, give a little information, then let them go away and make their own decision. And I think that's awesome. Next, from the Montreal Gazette, the audience at the Shrine Circus in Dollar des Ormeaux this month, probably they had no idea that the show they were watching had just become an activity protected by the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Last week, the Ontario Superior Court struck down a 2002 bylaw barring exotic animal acts in the city of Windsor on the ground it violated circus performers' freedom of expression. Locally, the ruling has implications for Mont-Royal and Saint-Laurent boroughs, which have similar prohibitions. It's very scary because they have created jurisprudence, said Pierre Barnotti, exec director of the Quebec Humane Society. The repercussions are huge. The court ruled the bylaw, enacted after lobbying by animal rights groups, was based on irrational considerations. Although the stated intent was to protect the public from dangerous animals, the city failed to provide at least a reasonable degree of evidence to causally link exotic animal performances to public safety, the court found. The bottom line is that for the past decade, the animal rights people have had things going all their way. That's going to change, said Len Volstenholm of Zentel DM Inc., which organizes circuses for the Shriners and challenged the Windsor bylaw. The local animal rights group Global Action Network will continue to lobby other municipalities, including Montreal and Laval, Director Andrew Plumley said, who added, "Where is the educational value in seeing an elephant out of its natural habitat, dressed up in a tutu, standing on its head?" Indeed. And from the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association, the animal rights movement and the recent emergence of animal law in the United States are reflections of dramatic changes in the social ethic toward animals, according to Dr. John A. Shattuck. This dramatic evolution in societal ethics is based on the emotional interdependence between animals and humans and the positive effects of animals on human health. Society has taken elements of the moral categories it uses for assessing the treatment of people and is in the process of modifying these concepts to make them appropriate for dealing with new issues in the treatment of animals, especially their use in science and confinement agriculture. Research procedures that were common just a few years ago are not only banned, but also condemned, Dr. Shattuck said. Although the public expressed its concerns clearly and frequently, neither the veterinary profession nor the research community was quick to respond. Dr. Shattuck explained the reason for veterinarians' ambivalence this way. When the interests of an animal conflict with those of a person, whose side is the veterinarian on? Additionally, veterinarians make the mistake of thinking that the rhetoric and all too frequently destructive behaviors of animal rights activists are occurring in a social vacuum and are inspired by self-interest. While this self-interest is often a major factor, Dr. Shattuck said, we must recognize that fringe groups are just that, on the fringes of much larger rational, logical, and important social movements. All this has not gone unnoticed by the legal profession. At least 6 state bar associations and the District of Columbia's have animal law sections, 28 law schools offer animal law courses, and 43 law schools have student legal defense groups, according to Dr. Shattuck. He said lawyers are increasingly interested in animal law, seeing it both as a new area of exploration and perhaps an expansion of legal concepts, and of course, as a potentially lucrative source of professional fees. Others are motivated by personal views of animals and their rights. Notably, legislation pertaining to animal welfare or rights couldn't be found in Congress 40 years ago, but during the past 7 years, up to 60 animal welfare bills were introduced annually, with even more at the state level. Regardless of one's views of the animal rights movement, the issues it is addressing are here to stay. And I wanted to read a lot of that article because it shows both that the AVMA have a long way to go, I think, in terms of thinking about animals, but it also shows that they're really sort of paying attention and recognizing that it's true, we're not going away. That's it for this week.
Great. That's Rob Moore giving us the news. He's co-hosting and did a lot of work on producing this show as well, so I want to say thank you to him. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. I think we're going to just jump directly into our interview because we have Tony on the line. Tony, I'm not quite sure how to say your last name.
It's Air.
Oh, okay. I was saying it very wrong.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show. You're the administrative guy for Armory, which is the Animal Rights Media Online repository. And I thought this sounded like such a great idea, and I'm glad someone took the initiative to put it together. Maybe you can give an introduction to what Armory is all about for our listeners.
Yeah, sure. We created it because it's just for somewhere where people can get images from and video from and things for their campaign materials. It was created because members of our local group were finding it difficult to find high-quality images for putting on posters and whatever you want, leaflets, videos, things like that. So we found issues such as, like, some of the organizations, you'd have to contact them and weeks filling out forms trying to get an image from them. And other ones wouldn't let use their images at all. So we just put it together so that anybody can go there and upload images and download whatever they want. And it's just like a free access thing for anyone to use.
And there's no copyright infringement or anything?
Well, that's one of the provisos for the actual site. It's if you own the image, you can put it up. If you don't own the image, copyright for the image yourself, then unless you've got permission to put it up from the organization and anything like that, then don't put it up because we don't want any groups getting in trouble for using copyrighted images.
Right. So when did you get the site up and running?
I started it about 3 weeks ago. And
wow.
Since then, we've had about 1,000 visitors.
That's fantastic. And so what are some of the images that are right now, those different categories that are available, what are some of the categories that people can contribute images to or download images from?
Well, at the moment, we've got vivisection, things like that, all sorts of different subcategories for that, all different types of animals. We've got factory farming, slaughter, the fur trade, horse racing, which is very touchy subject in the UK.
Okay.
Circuses, zoos, as well as hunting and things like that. And we've also got like places where people can put up their pictures of their protests and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's taking off.
Yeah, it's quite popular. In the last 3 weeks, we've had 1,000 images uploaded by different people.
Yeah, I've been researching factory farming now for about 4 years, and I find it continually frustrating to access those types of images. So when I saw a post from Armory, I was really delighted to see that something like this is taking place.
Yeah, I've had people from all around the world. Like I've had people in Israel and China and things getting in touch and saying, it's a good idea, here's some images.
Yeah, and so I guess you're able to, through your system, able to have large amounts of data on your site.
Yeah, we've just got a new server for it, actually, the other day. So it's pretty much free reign at the moment, so fill it up.
Right. And there was a section that I was found pretty interesting, too. You have a section on liberated animals.
Yeah, quite popular in the UK is liberations and things. But the problem is people can't put their images up anywhere because it logs their details and everything. So Armory doesn't encourage illegal activity, but if people want to put their images up of liberations on there, no details are kept of individuals. So it's whatever you want to do.
I think this is awesome because I prepare a lot of our campaign stuff for the show. And very often if I find something on the net, I have to, you know, email the webmaster and say, is it okay to get permission to use this image on our website or something like that? But now I can just go to your site and and have no qualms about it.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. I just wanted to say that's
really
cool.
Do you think that it will also turn into maybe a video archive? Will there ever be clips, or do you think you want just to continue just strictly with the still images?
Well, one of the things we did when we originally set it up was it's for video as well, because we were trying to create a little a motivational promotional video for our local group, for the local university, to try and get more people involved.
Mm.
And getting video clips on the internet is incredibly difficult.
Mm.
So we've got a few videos up there at the moment, but yeah, videos would be great as well, because we've put there's a new video out in the UK called the ALF movie, number 3 I think it is, and that was put up on the website in high quality, and we've had 400 people download it in a week.
Right on.
So people are liking videos as well as images, so it can be used for that as well.
I want to make sure that we give the email, the website address at least a few times so people can go and check it out. Can you give us the website?
It's animalrightsmedia.com.
Super. And that's all one word, no dashes, no dots.
Yeah, no dashes, all one word.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say thanks for being on the show. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to share about the site, but I just think I would just encourage everybody, if you have images, to send them to Tony, and there's contact information right on the website there.
Yeah, there's loads of different emails and things.
Thanks for being on the show.
That's okay.
We look forward to seeing the site grow. It's I'm sure it's going to get really big, which is exciting.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. We were speaking with Tony. Do you know how to say his name?
Air.
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 I can't
with the British
say
accent,
it.
Air.
You say it like this. Air.
Exactly. Oh. Tony Air.
Let me forget it. You should be in here. I should be talking. I don't know why I'm here. No, you're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. We just heard from Tony from Armory, which is the very new. I had no idea it was that
weeks.
New. Look at us. We're so on the ball. And that's the Animal Rights and Media Online Repository. And just a great, great tool. I'm really excited about it. Anybody who does any kind of work in this field, or if you just want a peek into what these industries look like, I think it's a great place to start. We are very delighted to have Brendan Brazier on our program today. And Rob, would you like to introduce Brendan?
He's one of the top professional Ironman triathletes in Canada. He's here to talk about a new book that he wrote called Thrive, A Guide to Optimal Health and Performance Through Plant-Based Whole Foods, and will tell us a lot about his new product called Vega, a 100% all-vegan meal replacement. Please join me in welcoming back to the show Brendan Brazier. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
How's things?
Been good, yeah. It's been going really well. Last few months have been pretty busy.
I don't know if Rob's already told you this, but we're so excited that you're on the program, and so many people have written us emails and are excited that you're here today, so we're delighted that that you could spend some time with us on Animal Voices.
Thanks for having me.
So in terms of your competition over the past year since you've been on, any highlights you want to report?
Well, last year was a really good year. I won the Canadian Championships in 50K.
Wow.
So that was something new for me. I'd never done anything longer than a marathon for just running. I just done triathlon.
So you ran 50 kilometers.
Right, yeah.
Straight. I just had to make that clear. Okay, sorry, go on.
Yeah, so that was the highlight of last year for sure, was winning that. And yeah, this year has been kind of a year off as far as racing goes. I've been racing professionally for the last 6 years now, and it's good. Every 4 to 6 years, they recommend taking a down year where you don't race, just kind of train, just to maintain fitness. So, yeah, in this off year, I've written a book, as Rob mentioned, and developed a new product.
Yeah, I think it's quite funny that when, you know, a lot of athletes that I talk to, they talk about their downtime.
Yeah.
So that just means, you know, writing a book, developing a new product. It's quite funny. So you were able to squeeze in writing this book. What was your inspiration behind Thrive?
Well, just being asked the same questions over and over, which are really valid, good questions, such as how do you feel yourself as a vegan and as an endurance athlete? And that's basically just an expanse on that question is the book. I think it's quite concise. It doesn't ramble on a lot. So that's the feedback I've had, that it does answer a lot of questions and not a lot of pages. And that's really what I wanted to do, is because I don't think there's anything else like that out there. Just get something else that's kind of a good guide to get people going and know that it is possible to be both vegan and an athlete.
I'd like you to explain specifically about your transition into veganism, because I read that after you made the switch that you were feeling actually kind of low in energy and you had to do a lot of research. Could you tell people about that?
Yeah, that's right. When I first became vegan, it wasn't really a very good experience, to be honest. It was a bit of a struggle just getting in enough calories and enough protein and the omega-3s and all the common things that a poor vegan diet lacks, but a good vegan diet, of course, has plenty of all those things. So, yeah, I started off with just basically eliminating animal products, which I think many people do, and I've found that so many times. People say that they used to be vegan. Different athlete friends of mine have tried it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks here and there and had a terrible time, and And one of the things I've found is that you really have to stick it out for the first good month, because the body's detoxing as well. It takes a while for it to get rid of all the toxins built up by the poor eating over the last few years. And then when a really good diet is introduced, the body's in a bit of a state of shock, and it has to clear itself out. And yeah, headaches and some stomach upset and things like that are common symptoms, but to persevere through that, the rewards are there, definitely.
So what did you do? Where did you go to find out how to do it properly?
Honestly, it was a lot of trial and error. When I first became vegan, it was 1990, and that was, there wasn't a lot out there then,
mm-hmm.
and the internet, of course, wasn't really around, or not for me at least, so it was hard to find information, but I've always been more of a hands-on kind of person anyway, so I like to just try things and just be really sensitive to what works and what doesn't. And being an athlete, too, I have the luxury of finding things out quicker, because anything new you try, you find out really fast if it's feeling good or not. Your body will tell you pretty quick. So that was something I found as well.
I wonder about the new book, Thrive. Is it geared towards sort of high-performance athletes, or is this a book really that is helpful to anybody who's interested in a vegan diet? Who's the audience you're hoping to reach with the book?
Yeah, it's mostly health-conscious, active people, I think, would find it most interesting. It's not geared towards high-performance athletes, although I think they could benefit from it. But yeah, and even non-athletic people, just in the sense that it talks a lot about nutritional stress, which is built up by poor diet, commonly just typical American diet, and how it can be really reduced greatly by a plant-based diet. And people might not think that's a big deal, reducing nutritional stress, but I found out that 40% of total stress of the average North American can be traced to the diet. So that means eating foods that are not nutrient dense at all, just completely lack nutrients, but the body still has to process it the same way and take just as much energy to digest, yet the yield is so much smaller in terms of the nutrients you get for it, so the payoff is way smaller. Therefore, the body is really working harder to get less, essentially. Therefore, that's quite a great stress on the body, and there's no return on the stress, whereas some stress, obviously, you know, if you're working really hard on a project at work and you get it finished, yeah, it's all stressful, but at least you have something to show for it. Whereas poor diet, you have nothing to show for it. It's just useless stress, really uncomplimentary, as I call it in the book. And so, yeah, I found that a good plant-based diet is definitely the best way to reduce overall stress.
Can you talk? Yeah, I just wanted to get more the sort of the technical definition of what nutritional stress is. Is it sort of, you know, stress to your immune system? Is this purely a physical stress? What exactly do you mean by this? This is kind of a new phrase for me, this idea of nutritional stress.
Right, yeah. Nutritional stress is basically just stress in general. It could be stress as in through emotional stress, you know, that's generated from family problems or even physical stress. And then nutritional it could be termed more specifically as physical, because, of course, it affects the body first, but then that goes off into all other branches and affects thinking and all kind of mental ability. And then, of course, sleep is affected by high levels of stress, and then that further increases stress. So it just turns into a bit of a vicious circle there that is most easily broken through good diet.
So more about Thrive, is it, do you have recipes in there? Do you have, because I guess your whole trial and error process of finding how to best fuel your body, I guess it's all right there in the book?
That's right, I provide a sample meal plan for a day. It's just a rough guideline, and people can alter it to fit their lifestyle, but it just teaches some principles more than specific things that people should or should not do. And I do have 6 recipes as well, one for each meal and each snack of the day in a sample situation there.
in the studio right now, we have my friend Levi Waldron, and he was vegetarian for a while, and then I sort of got into cycling, and he got into veganism about a year ago. We both influenced each other, and after he heard the first show that we did with you, he said that he was surprised. I'm talking for you, Levi, but he said that he was surprised that veganism wasn't just, you know, you could feel good with veganism, but that you actually consider veganism to be the optimal diet for athletics.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. But like I say, there is a bit of an adaptation phase, especially the worse the diet is originally, then the longer that transitional phase will have to last. And so I find also that people will try and adopt a vegan diet at bad times in their life, when they sort of hit a wall, they're feeling really stressed, they're feeling, for an athlete, for example, not performing well, and this is the time when most people try radical things, to use that term, but vegan diet usually being one of the things tried, I found, and that's the worst time to do it, is when your body is already really stressed, and therefore, even though it's a great thing to try, if the body is being really stressed and you just go to the detox phase, that's just another stress. And so the chance of succeeding on a vegan diet then is greatly reduced. So I tell athletes, if you want to try it in the off season. That's the time to do it. That's when the likelihood of succeeding is way higher, when the body is not under as much stress.
Brendan, you wanted to give out a number where people can get the book, because it's not available in stores yet, right?
Right. It's going to be in stores pretty soon, I'm hoping, but you can order direct from the publisher right now, and it's $10.95 Canadian, an 80-page book, and the number is 1-888-525-6394.
Brendan, I'd just like to thank you. I'm the one introduced a little bit earlier. That interview about a year ago I did find really inspiring, and sort of that interview in combination with a book called Becoming Vegan sort of were a first information for me as to just how advantageous a vegan diet could be for my own health, and then that sort of in combination with some of the information on bad things around factory farming and that were totally my inspiration for becoming vegan. So
And now you're hardcore.
Yeah, I am. So thank you.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, it's great. I feel that we're both pretty indebted to you. In Becoming Vegan, there's this, you know, one little chapter on vegan athletics, and it's sort of the place that I would direct people who are interested in becoming, you know, really high performance, very on the ball athletes as vegans. And it's so great that there's a book now that's so comprehensive that can help people on their transition to becoming the best vegan athletes they can.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Way to go, Brendan.
we're your cheerleaders right now.
We had both a question and a comment from Dave in BC, and he said he wanted to challenge you as the fastest vegan on two wheels in Canada.
We don't know if you're taking challenges or not.
Over the phone, Cheryl.
Yeah. And he also had a question. He said, do you know of any other top vegan cyclists in Canada or elsewhere?
I don't. I know of a few runners who are good vegan runners.
Mm-hmm.
But not at a professional level, and cyclists, no, I don't. I know there's a couple vegetarian triathletes around, but again, not at a really high level. The specific ones I'm thinking of actually drink a lot of whey protein, so probably not such a good thing.
Which is a great transition to another aspect of what we wanted to talk with you about, which is the new product Vega. Which is something that you also sounds like you developed in your off time.
Yeah.
Tell us about this new product and how is it unique?
Vega is a new meal replacement that will be on the market within, it's in some stores in the West right now, but it will be in the Toronto area within the next few months. And yeah, it's a powdered form meal replacement. So you just mix it with water, and there's berry, natural, and chocolate flavor. And of course, 100% vegan. It's the first one on the market that is really 100% vegan. And it's a whole food-based one as well, so it's very healthy foods. The first ingredient is hemp, and then flax, a large amount of flax in there for omega-3 and good fiber. And there's also pea protein and rice protein and chlorella, which is almost 70% protein. even flax has about 20% protein, so there's five protein sources, such a broad spectrum of amino acids. I'm really, really pleased with that. It's been working excellent, and most of the carbohydrate is from fiber, from the flax, from the hemp. And yeah, it really worked well for me. The whole premise of getting Vega going was, for years I've made a shake, just a blender drink that I've got all the nutrients that I need all in one shot. I've had that every day, so I don't have to kind of second guessing myself about, oh, what do I need, and am I getting enough calories, am I getting enough nutrients, and iron and calcium and zinc and everything. So I just blend up all these really good whole foods and have that each day. And so, yeah, I ended up approaching a company and asked them if they'd like to develop this with me. And they were, at first, they didn't know that it could be done because it hadn't been done, so maybe it can't be, but it turned out it could be. So, yeah, I'm really pleased with it. It came together well. And, yeah, it's basically a replica, which is the commercial version of that shake that I've made for you.
So some of the ingredients I'd like to ask more specifics about, like you mentioned chlorella. Maybe you could talk more about that. I read that you said that's your favorite green food.
Yeah.
Yay!
Tell us what that is.
Yeah, chlorella is excellent. It's really common in Japan, and that's where we get ours from. It's grown in fresh water tanks. It's kind of like a seaweed, yet it grows in fresh water, and it's a single-cell algae. The highest concentrated form of chlorophyll that can be found, which is excellent because it's very alkaline. Being an athlete, when you produce so much lactic acid from training, eating alkaline foods is a big advantage. It really speeds recovery just to help neutralize all the lactic acid. So part of the reason, one of the main reasons, is just to make the whole shake alkaline. So I've added chlorella for that. Plus, like I say, it's close to 70% protein, and it's full, complete protein as well. And it has B12, too, which is of course, many of you know, is very rare in plant form, and it's an excellent source of B12, too.
I'm those really excited. Things.
There's also called growth factor in it.
Say again?
It's really good for speeding recovery. It's really just helps the body regenerate and repair quicker.
There are a number of other products on the market. One is Greens Plus that I mentioned to you before. I don't know if you can talk about your competitors specifically, but I imagine they would be a competitor of yours in the health food stores.
You can speak generally, too, if you want to, about how your product is maybe different from what's out there.
Sure, yeah. A lot of products out there use artificial colors and flavors and some fillers for carbohydrate, added maltodextrin, for example, which is really not that healthy carbohydrate. But yeah, one of my stipulations when developing this was that it wouldn't have any of those things. And that's what made it a little more expensive, but I think it was really worthwhile just to do that.
We're going to ask you about price, but I wanted to say specifically that about Greens Plus for anyone else out there listening. A friend of mine said, oh, Rob, take the Greens Plus multi-formula vitamin complex thing. It's vegan and it's really great. So I did, and I started using it, but then I read the ingredients. I know that's a wrong vegan thing to do, not read the ingredients, but I read that it did have some bee products in it. So I emailed the company and I said, hey, your product has bee products in it, yet you claim that it's vegan. And then they wrote back to me and said, yes, it is vegan. The bees are not harmed in any way. Blah, 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 blah. and we actually, I mean, we emailed back and forth for months about this. And I said, I don't believe you. Where are these bees? are these crazy farmer treat? You know, anyway, it was a long email conversation. And I just want to say that, you know, they didn't back down. And I'm so excited about your product because it is 100% vegan. And it has all these great ingredients. How much is it?
Well, since it's actually a meal replacement as well, whereas I believe Greens Plus is more of just a supplement.
Yes,
that's right, yeah.
But this, it's actually, it complies with Canadian meal replacement guidelines, which means it is actually a meal and a supplement. So, yeah, the idea is that you don't have to take any other supplements and it replaces a meal. But, yeah, a bottle of 17 servings, which a serving is half a liter, so it's quite a bit, will retail for about $70. Some retailers will probably sell it for a bit cheaper. There's a couple around where I live that are selling it for $65, so somewhere in that neighborhood.
Hmm. And that does sound comparable to a lot of other products out there.
About $4 per serving.
Yeah, it's probably a dollar or two more and a couple of others, but like I say, it, most ingredients are organic as well, and that also adds to TikTok.
How does it taste?
I think it tastes great.
Yeah.
Yeah, the berry is a little bit sweeter. The chocolate is more chocolatey as opposed to being sweet.
Okay.
And the natural is just a nice, mild, very slight hint of vanilla from natural vanilla bean. And that's excellent if you want to mix with other things as well, blueberries or banana, blend that up.
I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, how would somebody use this? Because you talk about these glorious shakes that you'd be making on your own. Well, how would somebody use this product?
Well, for convenience sake, I just mix it in with water. It comes with a shaker. Yeah, just mix it straight with water and taste great. But if you want to get more elaborate, definitely blend up fruit and it, yeah, even better.
And when you use it, you know, before you're about to go do, you know, a run, or is it just, you know, for like, such as myself, you know, university student who's trying to grab a good meal before going up to school, how would you sort of use it on a daily basis, or would you use it on a daily basis, or is it more about training?
Personally, I think one divided serving a day could really help pretty much anyone. If you have a half serving in the morning and then a half serving, say, kind of mid-afternoon if you're at work and you're kind of thinking about reaching for a muffin or for some coffee or something less healthy, then just have the other half serving. And it's really quite filling because of the fiber as well. So I think that's a really good application. But before a run, what I like to do is just the chocolate, just put it in a bowl. Don't add any water. Just have the powder and dip a banana in just to get some extra carbs right before a run. That's what I've been doing, and that works really well.
And I wanted to ask you, you chose specifically to not include soy protein in Vega. Could you tell us about that?
Right, yeah. As most of you know, soy has been under a lot of scrutiny lately by the media, and justified or not, I mean, personally, I've never had a problem. I digest it well, and I think it's great. But a lot of people were saying, well, you know, if we're going to be eating tofu for dinner and tofu for lunch, and, you know, why would we want more soy in our diet from a meal replacement? It's not necessary, and tofu is so versatile and such a great food that we prefer to take our soy in that form as opposed to soy powder, which really is not as appetizing. So, yeah, I chose to not have soy at all.
We don't have that much time left, but you mentioned sort of at the beginning of this interview that Thrive, just going back to your new book, Thrive, that it answers in a pretty concise way some of the common questions that you keep answering over and over again, and you thought you would answer in a book. And I was just wondering if you could give us sort of a brief introduction to maybe some of those questions that people have been asking you.
Sure, yeah, a lot. There's some really specific ones, like where do you get your protein, where do you get your omega-3, iron, calcium, all that. And I answer those kind of questions through examples of what I eat, and more commonly examples of where you can find those different nutrients in foods and which foods they're in and what amounts and how to use them. For example, and I've got a brownie recipe in there that's wheat-free, gluten-free for anyone with allergies, and I grind up sesame seeds and flax seeds and use that as flour for the base of the brownies. So in the sesame seeds, there's so much calcium that one brownie a day is like having, you know, as much calcium as a glass of milk. And then the omega-3 in the flax is like having, you know, half a steak of salmon for a few brownies. So things like that just sort of raise people's awareness that you can really get everything you need from very simple means.
I love that I could tell somebody, no, really, you should eat one brownie a day,
yeah,
and you'll feel really good. It's really healthy for you.
Yeah, right.
But, it really depends on the ingredients that you're using.
Yeah, exactly. And I've got a raw soup recipe in there as well that has a huge amount of iron from the spinach and the pumpkin seeds, as much iron as 3/4 pound of beef just in one serving of soup. So,
wow.
Because that was a question I get to, like, well, you know, you can't be getting enough iron, and I assure people that I am. So now I've just given them the ins and the outs.
So, Brendan, this has been so awesome.
Brendan, it's, you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for sharing with us about your new book, Thrive, and the new product that you just put together called Vega. I want to make sure that people can get a hold of both of these things and more information about you. So if you could give us your contact info again and information about ordering, that would be great.
Sure. The direct line to the publisher is 1-888-525-6394. And my website is Brendan, B-R-E-N-D-A-N, Brazier, B-R-A-Z-I-E-R.com. And my email is brendan@brendanbrazier.com. So feel free to email me as well.
Great.
Thanks. That was Brendan Brazier, and he's an Ironman triathlete. Yeah. And also just wanted to quickly mention too that this new meal replacement that he has out, it's GMO-free.
Yes,
and that was
true.
He really wanted to make sure that the product that he was putting together, he said that, you know, some of the ingredients are organic, that was environmentally as sound as possible, because that's definitely part of his ethical view as well, and something he tried to incorporate. We are going to get Julie on the line. We have her on the line, and she is a volunteer with Farm Sanctuary. She's going to tell us about the Walk for Farm Animals.
Yeah, she's the local coordinator for Farm Sanctuary's Walk for Farm Animals. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you for having me on the show today.
Great, thanks. So tell us about the Walk for Farm Animals, when it is, what it's for, what's going on.
Well, I'm very excited to tell you about this upcoming event in Toronto. The Walk for Farm Animals takes place October 2nd in Toronto on the Beaches Boardwalk. It's a walkathon that everyone is welcome to attend, and it is in honor of World Farm Animals Day, which is a special day recognized globally to remember, honor, and memorialize the more than 51 billion farm animals who die every year in food production at factory farms and slaughterhouses around the world.
She's going to ask about if there was a website people could go to.
Yes, there's a lot of information available on the website, which is www.walkforfarmanimals.org. And for the Toronto location, it's walkforfarmanimals.org/location/Toronto.htm. And they can also email me at toronto@walkforfarmanimals.org. And they can also call 416-910-7411, and I will gladly send them out some information.
If you missed any of that, people can always contact any of our guests through Animal Voices at animalvoices@ciut.fm. Julie, I just wanted to ask you about sort of what this actually looks like. It's an unusual sounding event. Would you get, donations, or what does this look like? You show up at the boardwalk, then what happens?
Well, you can register in advance. The registration fee is $10, and that entitles each participant to a Farm Sanctuary's T-shirt. And this year, the T-shirt is designed by the artist who created the Mutt comic strip, Patrick McDonald. It's a really cute T-shirt. And also, you are asked to get pledges because it is a fundraising event. We are trying to raise awareness about the suffering of farm animals, but also raise funds for Farm Sanctuary, who I cannot speak highly enough about. They're a wonderful organization. I know you already know a lot about them, but for those who don't, they operate a network of, the largest network actually, of rescue and adoption shelters for farm animals, as well as a huge outreach and educational program. And anyone who pledges more than $25 will receive a Farm Sanctuary membership and as well a subscription to their newsletter.
Yeah, one of the things that always strikes me about Farm Sanctuary is that they're not doing very abstract work. You know, we do on Animal Voices, we try to raise awareness, and as well Farm Sanctuary does, but they do a lot of hands-on shoveling poop, taking care of animals who have been hurt. So if you really want to put your money towards a great cause that's going to undoubtedly help animals out there, Farm Sanctuary is a great place to donate to.
Yeah.
And their website is www.farmsanctuary.org.
Great. Can you just give us the dates again quickly?
The date is October 2nd.
Okay.
And you can register in advance, or you can register down there. Registration starts at 11 a.m., and the walk starts at 12 noon. It's a really easy walk, and if anyone knows the Beaches Boardwalk, it's a really beautiful place to come, right on the water, and 5Ks, so people are welcome to bring their dogs on a leash. It's a very dog, animal-friendly area, and bring their kids. The more the merrier.
Great.
There are events like this taking place around the globe. And last year, Walk for Farm Animals helped raise $84,000 U.S.
Wow.
For Farm Sanctuary. There are 42 walks taking place this year in North America, but Toronto is the only location. So I truly hope that as Torontonians, they'll come out and support this great event and, more importantly, this really great cause.
And is it wheelchair accessible?
It is wheelchair accessible.
Okay,
there's a huge free parking lot as well at the foot of Coxwell, right on Lakeshore Boulevard East.
Great, Julie. Thanks so much for being with us.
You can walk, you can roll. Sounds good.
Absolutely.
Okay. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. Thanks for joining us today.